to Piercing the Veil on bbsradio.com with your hosts Jordan and Corey, and new guests appearing weekly. During the show, Jordan and Corey will pierce the many veils of illusion to reveal the universal truths and tools for negotiation inherent to success in one's daily life, including but not limited to 1. Multidimensional wordsmithing. 2. Mastering and commanding negotiations. 3. Constructive trusts and wealth preservation. And 4. Spirituality. Pierce the veil, and the truth will reveal itself.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Another episode of Piercing the Veil. Today is April 10th, 2016. Last week, what we talked about was sustainable earthbag building, some traditional methods that might be not so sustainable, and some other things that you could do to work your way into this life or this lifestyle without breaking your bank, and some feasible and practical options, shall we say. This week, we're actually going to talk about community governance. So if you do get past the first part and you build something of your own, say you have a little plot of land somewhere, number one, what are you going to do to deal with the city officials? Are you going to partner with them? Are you going to fight them? Those are some considerations that you'll need to take under, you know, your plans for the future. And then, is it just going to be you? Do you have a couple friends helping out? Is that going to be enough? What do you need for the garden production or the workshops or whatever that you're doing? What sort of manpower is going to be required, okay? So when you get to that point, you start thinking about those things, then you need to have some sort of community governance or some sort of community regulations or rules that are put together as a whole from everybody, and something that is done properly and right, not necessarily what we have and what we would call a community today, where your neighbors don't talk to each other. They don't know anything about the other person's preferences. They don't know the other person's skills. There's a, hi, how are you? And, you know, did you have a good day? And all these types of things. And usually not even that. So the guest that we're going to have on today, his name's Frank Bacon. He's an independent researcher. He's a real smart guy. He studied a lot of different options and some new alternatives into community governance when it comes to local or eco-villages or small little types of communities, how they should be run, what types of monetary concerns are going to be addressed, what skills are utilized and how they're utilized, all these different types of things that come into play when you're dealing with more than just one person. You know, it can't be Lord of the Flies out there or everybody's going to, you know, be at each other's neck. So these are the types of things that once you've really leveled up, you've made the decision, you've moved into a space in your life where you have a piece of land, you want to start something, which is the space that GTEC has moved into. At this point, you need to be talking about these things, you need to be planning them, you need to be thinking about them, and that's what we're going to do today. So Corey, I know that you've done a little bit of research into this as well. You're always on point on our topics. I really appreciate it. You do a lot of pre-research into these things. What has been your experience? I know you've kind of dealt with a few communities out there in Arizona. I know they have the that one intentional community. There's a religious or spiritual community that's partnering with the city and the town. Could you speak briefly into some of those things, just as an example?
Sure. As you mentioned, there's a group out here, probably about 100 plus, 120 folks. They're on a piece of land down here in southern Arizona. They're pretty much self-sustainable. They've got they grow their own food. They have a lot of independent energy resources. The ag land down here is fantastic. Actually, it's an old river valley, a large flat plain. The river actually runs up north from Mexico. It's like the Nile. It's like one of the only north running rivers, probably the only north running river in North America, if I'm not mistaken. And they do a lot of, they seem to be a pretty tight group. They have their own spiritual dimension, their own spiritual belief system. I believe it's based somewhat on the Book of Urantia. And they do segue with, they provide other types of services in and around town. They have a real estate company. They have a legal company. They have a a gallery, art gallery, gift shop where they sell books and some of their works by people in the community. They have pedal cabs, you know, where they bike people around. It's a little, kind of a little tourist town. So they're doing their thing. There's a little bit of animosity in from certain quarters from the locals, probably based on some of the different religious beliefs and so forth. But for the most part, I think they're right on point with how they're doing stuff. And they are extremely well organized. And there's somebody very smart over there because apparently they're very well financed as well. So I guess that's an example of how to work, create their own world and segue with this world, and how to do it successfully. You know,
Excellent. I've been to their restaurant before in Tucson.
Right.
Yeah, and you know, and you know my stance. Everyone knows my stance if you've been listening on religion and spirituality. I think looking within is the only thing to do. And if you have a group of individuals who are looking within, that's the best people to operate with. There's no religious or spiritual requirement or component necessary to operate an eco-village. I think that's a big... There's a lot of people who have had a spiritual component that may have either taken that in a nasty direction or a cultish direction or something like that. And so there's a lot of prejudice against intentional communities. But for the most part, if you look at what's happening, it's production. It's small-scale production, just like the United States, or America, I should say, pre-1933 was doing. People were actually bartering, trading, selling, buying on their own credit, on their own craft, on their own creation, on their own name or reputation, right? And this can be done again. If you incorporate the city officials and the city administration into it in such a way that they have access to the land in a restricted fashion or capacity, once a week or twice a week, something like that, then you can assist these people in learning about it and incorporate it into their own lives. Because let's be honest, even the most hardcore, you know, I'm the law cop and I can do whatever I want, if he's given a choice between, if he really knows, between GMOs and organic food, he's going to eat organic food, especially if he's going to feed it to his children, right?
Right.
And there might be exceptions, and obviously that's a personal matter that somebody's got to deal with. But what I am saying to you is that people will appreciate what you are bringing. And if you can tie the community in from the beginning and give notice and give proper notice, you don't need to bend over for anybody. A lot of people bend over for a lot of people. And I, for one, I don't bend over.
Yeah, okay? I'd like to add to that. Yeah, it's important to segue somehow or to communicate. Right, they say a maxim of law: a gentleman gives notice. To let these folks know what you're doing, so that there's that you eliminate any ambiguity, especially in small town situations or what have you. You know, if there's no communication between your group and with the municipalities in some kind of capacity, you don't give them notice, then it's going to be all up to speculation and rumor and hearsay, and that will work against you. Also, to your point about food, I was just in town today, and there's a little there's a small farm on the same river, and they were selling some of their produce today, and the guy told me that a few people have come up to him and were like, "How do you get your vegetables so green?" Because people were astonished by the physical, just the physical appearance of this organically grown local produce. So that's right. To your point, people notice, even if they're not up on it, people will be like, "Wow, that looks like I've never seen vegetables like that before."
It's inevitable. You can't avoid noticing something like that. That's so instinctual and tied to your to everything that you know would be good for your body. You can see it. It's the same thing. You can hand a baby that's never touched a food before something, right, and there might be a personal preference, but they'll know if it's good for them or not. And they'll continue, if you let them develop their own eating habits and have proper good choices to start with, they will know instinctively what materials they need to put into their body to feed their micronutrient, macronutrient scales, what types of, you know, microbial content needs to be involved. You'll see babies put dirt and grass and things. Everything goes into their mouth. Mm-hmm. It's an instinct. It's not just a way of testing or a sensory feeler input to go, okay, what is this, right? You can understand there's a little bit of that going on, but they're instinctively putting minerals and bacteria and everything they need to build up their immune system in their mouths, okay? So that's the whole idea behind the structure of the food you're putting in your body. It's real simple. There's lots of information on it, lots of varying opinions. Now, the one thing everybody misses, and I've got the fucking balls to say it, the one thing that everybody misses is, organic or not, if you're going outside, you're still growing aluminum, barium, and strontium-coated soil and plants. There are metals and heavy metals in most of these plants, organic or not. The only way to avoid that is obviously hydroponic growing or growing inside, which is still, you know, considered a form of organics, I suppose, as long as you're using some sort of compost tea as opposed to a nutrient solution. So that's one thing that everybody misses, and I think that there's just no getting around it besides going indoors eventually or having some sort of air filtration system. So again, I will say it for the record in front of the entire world. I truly believe that, yes, you can go organic. Yes, you can change your water. Great. But take notice of what it's really made of. Even if it's organic, maybe spend $50 and get an independent research test and see if there's metals in there. I would be surprised if you didn't find anything. In fact, I will give anyone who can prove to me, if they go find an organic farm and they go get something tested and show me the results, and you can show me that there is no heavy metals in there, obviously there should be some sort of things here and there, these little iron content and stuff like that. That doesn't count. I mean aluminum, barium, strontium, things that we know and are proven to be in chemtrailing. If you can find something that doesn't have it in there, I will give you a free 1-hour consultation on any topic that you choose. This is my offer to anyone who is listening, because I don't believe anybody's going to take it up. So...
And if they do come up with it, that would be good to know. Whatever they're right. doing.
How did that happen?
Right. Yeah. And again,
this applies to outdoor crops that are being exposed to air and soil and water from outdoors that hasn't been filtered.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, there's not much you can do about the ambient environment other than, as you say, go indoors. Any steps towards improving the quality of the food that you're accessing to and putting in your bodies, all for it.
Yes, and including meat. I mean, let's talk about meat real quick before we have Frank Bacon on. Okay. So what we're going to do is also segue into animals. It's not just plants. It's the quality of the animals that you're consuming if you consume meat. And let's be honest, there's a lot of people that eat meat. Dogs, cats, chickens, cows, pheasants, quails, birds, whatever. Now, how that meat is being processed and slaughtered, it plays a huge, huge role in the energetics you're taking on. Mm. And so I actually met somebody today out of the blue. We were just conversing, and his idea, and he's with some investors right now, pitching this to large meat companies, his idea is to cut all the expense of slaughtering, cut all the energetic nastiness of it. Animals don't need to be dragged into a room where they smell death or see somebody being murdered in front of them, right? And they don't need any of that. Put them to sleep in the fucking field. Process them where they need to be processed. Load them all up on a trailer. Put them to sleep. Kill them with the thing. And then process the bodies, right, in a sustainable fashion. There's no need for the terror and the horrific things that go on. The grinding up of baby chickens alive and all sorts of different nasty things, hooking pigs in their legs and dragging them out of a walk-in fridge where they're all terrified and kept for hours and cold, and they get to see their friends being hooked and squealing, dragged away one by one. You understand? It's, you know, they started giving, cows were wising up to what was going on, so they started giving them a choice. There's even a meme on Facebook. They would actually give the cow two doors to go into the slaughterhouse instead of one entryway. And so it actually would have the illusion of going through the left or the right, and then we get to pick, and both ways led towards death. There's a lot of things that mirror that in life. It's a cruel, sick joke if you're not aware of it. It's pretty fucking funny if you are, okay? So the meat solutions and the produce solutions are one and the same. We can really change this on a global scale if people would just wake the fuck up and stop dicking around with their money and keeping it in the bank somewhere. Utilize it. Use it for something. It's a tool. Why don't you go out and make an investor group in your community for something that you believe in? Maybe you already are doing that. So with no further ado, we're going to bring on Frank Bacon. I believe he's on the other line. We'll bring him on, and he's going to talk with us a little bit about sustainable communities, how to govern them, some sort of aspects of monetary concerns, and we'll just do our regular free flow thing, Corey. Ask whatever questions you feel like asking, and we'll go from there.
Excellent. Frank.
Having trouble with harassing collection agencies? Creditors breathing down your neck? Feeling like you're drowning in debt? The Guild of Tactical Wordsmiths is here to help you now. GTAC is an ecclesiastical guild association of aggressive debt assassins who can eliminate your debts, free negative marks from your credit report, and get you compensated for unfair collection practices or emotional damages. They have a proven track record of success and sustainable results, which will have creditors and debt collectors shaking in their boots. This is not your typical credit repair or verification. GTAC uses proven techniques and negotiation tactics to completely eliminate your debt or conflict, remove negative marks from your credit reports, and in most cases, GTAC will retrieve compensation for you. Call for your free 15-minute consultation today at 214-290-3053.
Hey, everybody. Sorry about that. We had a few technical difficulties. Luckily, the people that run our radio show are spot on and super badass, so you probably just heard a commercial there. We do have Frank on the line. There's a little technical difficulty getting him on. Welcome, Frank. How are you doing today?
Greetings, Jordan, and how are you, Corey?
Excellent, sir. Nice to have you.
Thank you. I've been really looking forward to talking to both of you, but I've had some talks with Jordan before. I was just listening to the conversation you guys were just having about the food supply, and how strange is that? I mean, who hasn't figured out that they become the food supply?
Yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah, you're a milk cow or a beef cow, one or the other.
Or a chicken. Or a chicken.
Or a chicken.
Or a sheeple.
A chicken. Chicken in many, many, many pieces. Yeah, that's been the that was something I was actually going to try and avoid with talking to you guys. The remain topical about the idea of the communities, but the food supply is just so darn prevalent with communities, because if you don't own your food, you don't own anything. So
sure.
Well, what would you guys like to get started with today?
Yeah, so if you could just tell us a little bit about your research. I know you've done a lot of research into digital currencies and blockchain. That's something that people, I think, can really get into on their own time. Maybe we can touch on it a little bit. I'm more interested in about recording and having different records and functions of a community in a digital world or in a small contained environment and remaining completely independent from outside hooks or entrenchments or encroachments. So I know
Absolutely.
That's something that you've really done a lot of research into, and you've got the floor, Frank. However you Absolutely. Want to bring it up, we'll just ask some clarifying questions.
Well, excellent. Just to get some of the platitudes out of the way, you know, as far as my who I am and what I do, I'm basically a work of legal fiction here. You know, I'm a blind actor. I'm psychologically intelligent, but I'm pretty much a cyber avatar, and I don't play in the 3D meat space too well. But for the sake of this conversation, let's just stay in 3D meat space, you know, time and space for all of us that are walking around in meat suits. And to give you an idea of what my background is I've played a lot of roles with quite a few people in the community of science and technology and breakthrough work, and took an early retirement and just been living my life out. And in that time, I felt the need. Actually, because of a good friend of mine, I call her looks far woman. So a good friend of mine out there that I has been keeping me kind of grounded. I'm a far out kind of guy, a far out man, and so I needed a looks far woman to help me out. And we have been talking about community for a long time, but I needed to kind of come forward and start open sourcing. I'm a bit of an open sourcer, if you will, and open sourcing a lot of these ideas, because I think too many people are getting too hung up on the idea that somebody is going to come along and fix all this stuff for them. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like the food supply and your land and mortgages, the death notes, right? Mm. So I prefer to just tell the story. I'm more of a storyteller and just pretty aware of this stuff. And I keep it pretty, you know, in the context of a story of what we're talking about here. Now, if you have callers or people that want to, you know, challenge me or, you know, ask me to back anything with evidence and things like that, we can cross that bridge when we get to it. For the most part, what I'm really into right now is on the creative deconstruction of the old world, the literal creative deconstruction of everything that many people might know or feel or see in the world, because the old world has been killed off and it's decaying, and there's a new world, new earth, if you will, taking its place of more of a conscious world. It's the rise of an intuitive humanity that's going on right now. And it's going to be more of like thousands and thousands of nations, a future primitive, if you will. We're going to go rather primal, but we have a lot of technology now to keep us from, tribal, but we have a lot of technology to keep it all wrapped up and rather organized. And one of the things that you brought up, Jordan, was the blockchain technology. And that's something that's been around for quite some time, but really got its start in 2008. And so with the years that have gone by, we're really at the point of like where the internet was when email was the killer app and everybody started getting the internet in their house because they needed email. So blockchain is like email in a sense. It's more of like the internet 2.0, and it's a way of recording things through the computer world that is very stable and very much, it's a commitment, if you will. I'll give you an example. If Jordan were to go down and get a bank account at the bank and record a $100 deposit in the bank, and Corey were to come around and log into that bank's records and see that deposit, and as a hacker, let's say, Corey goes and takes one of the zeros off, steals $90 overnight, and then Jordan goes back the next day to take his money out, the hacker, Corey in this sense, could have covered his tracks so well that the $90 is stolen and Jordan will never get it back. And that's based primarily because of the technology of databases and how banks do their record keeping and everything. Well, what blockchain did, blockchain came along and showed the world a way of recording something so that when Corey goes back in to change that record and make it $90 softer, you know, take a zero off or whatever, that record is recorded and stays with the original recording. That record is just muting over time. It changes over time. So you could go back and see that the $90 was stolen. Does that kind of make sense?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a record, a transactional record. So of all transactions and entries, and whether that's banking or whether that's a registry of a birth, or you know, we talked about some of this stuff off the air. Mm. Yeah, so there's a number of different things you can tie that into. You can sort of have it as like a social proof or a barter credit. You know, even with barter, people think it's like a swapping of this or that. There is actually some notes or scripts that people would make or agree, like this feather is, you know, a medium of exchange. And they would go and they would take feathers off all these, you know, animals, and they pass an even number of feathers out to everybody. And then everybody could have a barter credit. So if party A has what party C wants, but party B wants what party A has, but party A doesn't want what party B wants, you know what I mean, or wants to give, then they can all just exchange the credit instead, and everybody can buy what they want. And so the blockchain seems to be some sort of comprehensive way of doing not only that, but also recording and preserving instances or circumstances or specific events, no matter what domain that might apply to. Is that
correct? It goes further than that, because you brought up a great and interesting point there, you know, as far as, let's say, we're all going to use feathers. Well, what's to stop somebody from coming in and bringing in more birds and taking feathers from those birds and inflating the number of feathers in the economy, if you will. Mm. So a blockchain can also do
a blockchain,
give you
a blockchain record of how many feathers you started with.
Exactly. Well, not only that, but it can give you a blockchain record of every specific feather in the chain. Mm-hmm. In other words, you're familiar with the term the Internet of Things, and what that means is that you have an identifier of the thing. And so now the thing itself is identified and has a life of its own. And really the transaction is just the secondary. So we're worried about people recording our transactions, and really this is recording of the things that the transactions are for. In other words,
that's right.
The feather is the metadata. Thing that's recorded. Yeah, the metadata. And it's really now just assigned to you or just assigned to Corey when you decide to give the feather over to Corey. But that's the basis of blockchain. And what you were saying is that it can go into a lot of other things. And that's the point. It can do and revolutionize everything. The Internet was information technology exploding onto the scene. And now we have the Internet of Things with blockchain exploding on the scene. And so now everything in our world can have its own record of where it came from and where it's going. And if you think of the implications of what this may mean, in the supply chain, that's going to change everything. So, you know, we walk around in a world where everything is thrown away, at least here in the West. And I walk through the desert, and it's one gigantic landfill out here. But imagine if I were to pick up a bottle and scan my my phone take my scanner and my phone and scan the bottle. I can now I can now check that bottle, see whose hands it's been in and where it came from, and actually hold the person who made it accountable for taking it back. You see what I mean?
For throwing it out into the desert.
Well, if it ended up there and I have it, I now have a chain of custody.
Chain of custody.
You see?
What you're describing, Frank, to me is sort of representative of what the Freemans and the Patriot guys were always trying to understand, which is the full unlimited commercial liability. I'm standing in my full unlimited commercial liability. Are you? Do you really know what that means? And it's 100% authenticity, 100% taking responsibility, 100% duty. Not rights. It's not rights-based. It's duty-based. It's notice-based. It's doing this, doing that, doing the proper, giving the proper timing, this and that. And so that's what I hear when you say holding people accountable as opposed to some sort of replacement for an Orwellian society.
Well,
you're actually just
about it,
bringing
Jordan,
individual
it
and personal responsibility.
It doesn't require the rules. See, here's where it also off track, is that people think that you have to write more rules that then make other meatbags have to go and enforce those rules and everything's screwed up. The rules in the code. The code's written correctly, how you use the code. You will never be able to break the code, because what's great about blockchain is it's this gigantic encryption machine. It's bigger than most computers out there. I'll give you an example. One of the biggest blockchains in use right now, the first blockchain in use, is a cryptocurrency known as Bitcoin. And people get very, very confused about this, and I can clean it up, but I'm not going to go into all the details about it, because it takes a good 1 hour talk to educate people that don't really understand it up to a level that they need to. But for the sake of this discussion, Bitcoin was the first blockchain that's in functionality right now. It's running, okay? And it is bigger than Google. Most people don't realize this. That if you took all of Google's servers and put them in a room, they would probably come up to be about 5% of the computational capacity of what the blockchain that's running Bitcoin is doing. So it's a giant supercomputer that can't be stopped. Now, if you had attached the accountability in there, a lot of people would come to you and say, well, I can't trust that. Show me where your trust is then, because the trust is based on the fact that this is one of the largest computers that's not really hackable. You know, granted, there are people trying, and there have been some incidents, but not necessarily breaking the actual blockchain. We're coming
Frank,
to a
I
point
actually,
where that chain.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt you. Actually, before you get any further on that, I have a comment to make about Bitcoin. And of course, I can't verify this. I haven't looked into it completely, but I have it on good information that the original logarithms or the algorithms for Bitcoin were designed specifically for people to mine somebody's DNA so they can replicate and have a genetic blueprint. So it's a small independent genome project for a few certain people that were the original developers and creators of this Bitcoin, is my understanding. So there's
that's
a reason why it's extremely
big. Interesting
big.
Information there. There is. And I'm not going to go one way or the other, because there are actual coins that are their hashing power, if you will, is being used for protein folding and all that. In other words,
exactly.
Think of it as giant computers, and the bigger you make the computer, the bigger the complexity of the problems it can solve. What goes on with you know, any particular blockchain is independent of the services that they're providing. Some do it better than others. Bitcoin, for example, is terrible. It's a power hog. But it's a proof of concept. It's like the first out of the gate. And we have hundreds of currencies right now, but the thing about currency, fiat, debt-based currency, is that you and I both know, and Corey does as well, and so do your listeners, that debt-based currency is one of the tricks that the, you know, originators or the rulers have used to control humanity for a long time. Now that we don't have to follow in those footsteps anymore, the nice thing about coding your currency or coding your value system is that it has rules that you cannot just go in and willy-nilly break whenever you want.
And so
however you want to use that hashing power, that computing power, is pretty important to those rules. So that's why people will adopt one over another. But this is not a talk about, hey, everybody go into Bitcoin. This is a talk about, hey, everybody, the shit's about to hit the fan. And if you don't know what's happening, good luck. Because I'm not slowing myself down to pick up the pieces for everybody else that wasn't paying attention. You know, same time and space.
Everybody's got to come together, Frank. And I know that we've talked about this. Now, as far as integration, say, for example, the values of the community, if they're ingrained and they're ID'd on every single item that's in that community. So if you scan everything in physical in that community and you attribute it to a certain person based on whose possessions it is, yada, 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 personal possessions get scanned in, then the accountability is there, because in the morals and the values, if somebody's item is out of place or something's happening or it's against whatever the community has agreed on, you can literally scan that, have the prima facie case or proof right there, and not only is it proof, but then it gets logged into the system and adjusts their account accordingly. So maybe they get
exactly
a $10 fine less on their credits next month because it's all automatically been logged by Joe Bob over here that he's asked them to keep their stuff off his front porch 7 times and they haven't. So he finally, after giving them plenty of notices, he finally went over and scanned it as a enforcement for his claim, and he got settled. So that takes away the need for courts. It takes away the need for all of that crap, and it settles people's stuff privately.
It's going to get a whole lot easier too, because it really just goes back to insurance and policy and policy enforcement. You know, I'll give you another little scenario here. If you're a beer maker and you want to put your beer in these really nice crafty bottles or something like that, well, the manufacturing of the bottle itself is something that manufacturing has to take. You're putting your beer in the bottle, but the bottle ends up, you know, in landfills or broken in the ground or whatever. You could actually assign a value to that bottle, that if somebody were to pick that bottle up and return it, they have a guarantee return. So you can actually do it a whole lot easier than just your typical, hey, bring me a bunch of bottles. No, this particular bottle is actually valued more than that particular bottle, and this particular bottle is valued a little less, and, you know, that sort of stuff. But then the bottle itself could control its own supply chain, could be responsible for its own whereabouts. Do you see what I mean?
So now you're taking manpower out of the equation, which is what we need to do in a small community.
Exactly. And then that community can also build upon a larger manufacturing base and even get their products outside the community and still have a return chain, you know, of products coming back. So, hey, I'll sell you my pies or I'll sell you my organic vegetables, just bring me back the basket. Well, why would I bring back the basket? Well, because the basket has a value that's associated with. You see where I'm going?
I do, and this is the way that our society operated pre-1933, in equity, in credit, in republic, and it's not that foreign policy is the main reason for this stuff not happening anymore. It's not that we're exporting all of our trade. It's not that we're exporting all of our manufacturing and our production overseas. That is a small surface result of the ingrained change in the system from a community-oriented system to a consume, 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 borrow, borrow, borrow system. And this is a solution not only for the United States but the entire world, is by operating this way and using some sort of blockchain system. Obviously not Bitcoin is you know, probably not preferable, but some sort of system where people can be held accountable, people can get their claims relieved without wasting somebody else's time, everybody is equitable, and if there's some sort of serious crime done, obviously you still have some sort of judiciary or a enforcement
you would actually enforce that through policy. You're going to police the policy is the policy, and that's why you have people that are educated on how the how the supply chain may be insured. You know, for that assurance to happen, people like to see it in writing. Well, we don't see it in writing anymore. It's in the code. Silly meatbags. It's in the code, but they want their, 100 trees slaughtered in order to get their insurance policy printed out and sent to their house. It's ridiculous. We don't need that anymore. So it's really about going to the paperless society and allowing the back office work to be handled by the products themselves. Because smart contracts is the real killer app behind what blockchain does, and that is executable code that is functioning on top of the chain and is self-executing. It's autonomous, and we're already creating in the world of blockchain autonomous organizations. They're called distributed autonomous organizations. The second big contender in blockchain is a group called Ethereum. And Ethereum is basically taking all that hashing power you were talking about that may or may not be for various reasons, and they're opening that hashing power up. They're opening that computational power up to be a world computer. And then as you need resources from that computer, you pay as you go, pay as you play, if you will. So if you're going to be Amazon and you want to own 30% of the market, you're going to pay for 30% of the world computer. But that payment is going to the rest of the people that are actually sharing that computer. It sounds like techno-communism, but what it is that's that programming that gets in the way of all the people that are conditioned through all their, muggled school mumbo-jumbo.
You're absolutely right, and it's not a form of communism because there's no centralized control. There's a individual responsibility component and individual rights component that's built into the system, which is it's a hybrid balance system because everything else doesn't work.
It's true, and it's colors, in a reverse order. Communism is a form of control, just like socialism is a form of control. Capitalism is a form of control. So let's distribute and open source the control, and then you use it however you want to, Fred, or you use it however you want to, Jill or John or whoever. So if people want to go and be communistic, communes just means community, for crying out loud. Let them be, who they want to be or how they want to be. But it takes away a lot of the coercion, which has been at the root of all the evil that's been going on. The coerciveness of societies against one another. The coerciveness
conspiratorial
of men against other men. Yes.
Yes. Wow,
so
that's
got
wonderful.
Smart money
we're actually going to go to... We're actually going to go to commercial break, but I do want to touch a little bit into integration if we could. We've talked about what could be done with it. Is there any type of fast integration of what is required, some basic setup requirements, stuff like that for people who might be at this level that want to start doing something like this on a local or centralized fashion?
Well,
I would like to
address the farmers, the future farmers. So let's take it in that direction.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Okay, great. When we get back, we're going to talk with Frank a little bit about future farmers and these other topics that we've been speaking about regarding blockchain and local communities and local governance. So we'll see you when we get back.
Having trouble with harassing collection agencies? Creditors breathing down your neck? Feeling like you're drowning in debt? The Guild of Tactical Wordsmiths is here to help you now. GTAC is an ecclesiastical guild association of aggressive debt assassins who can eliminate your debts, free negative marks from your credit report, and get you compensated for unfair collection practices or emotional damages. They have a proven track record of success and sustainable results, which will have creditors and debt collectors shaking in their boots. This is not your typical credit repair or verification. GTAC uses proven techniques and negotiation tactics to completely eliminate your debt or conflict, remove negative marks from your credit reports, and in most cases, GTAC will retrieve compensation for you. Call for your free 15-minute consultation today at 214-290-3053.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Another episode of Piercing the Veil. Today we have our guest on is Frank Bacon. If you're just joining us, we're speaking about blockchain, which is sort of the comprehensive form of what digital currencies have been made into. It can be used for a lot more than just currency, as we've been speaking. You can actually use it for records and holding accountability and forming some sort of community governance or values or core principles that are recordable and unchangeable except by the consent of everybody. So we're actually going to talk a little bit more about on the local level how these sort of techniques can be used, what sort of technologies are best. And so we're going to bring Frank back on right now. And Frank, take it away.
Well, thank you. I think we were going to go into the direction of farming, and this is kind of interesting subject in and of itself. So farming, for the sake of blockchain, as you were talking earlier about the hashing power of Bitcoin's blockchain being used for certain genome projects or whatever, the point being is that anybody can jump in and offer their help to help mine the hashing power behind a blockchain. So, for example, or make this a little easier to understand, think about this blockchain as just this big mathematical process that has to be constantly attended to. And if you only have 100 computers that can provide, you know, the computational speed of getting through, you know, one record every second or so or whatever, you can ask for help. You can get more people involved. They can bring their computers in, load the be a part of that total computational framework. And that's the brilliance behind blockchain. It was actually designed to be a distributed computer system where it didn't have to be in one location, that it could be running these processes parallel all over the world at all times.
Well, Frank, that's interesting. I'm sorry. I have to bring this up because I know you're going to love this farming. What about Arduino-based hydroponics systems, stuff that's indoors, huge hectare farms indoors that are completely automated? You could turn that into a completely logged, registered, every time a plant got picked, every time a seed got planted,
That's how you shut down the FDA. That's how you shut down these idiots that are trying to control and centralize everything. Because now, the Internet of Things allows you to put specific sensors, and you can actually, I'll give you an example. I work in Colorado, and I do quite a bit of work with the cannabis industry, and we have a seed-to-sale tracking. So every single plant is tracked in a central database to the government, of all things. Shame on them. But we can we can actually give every plant its own registry and database and tie that information in with everybody else, the aggregate of everybody else, and you can now compare that plant to how plants are growing all over the world if they wanted to share that information. Mm-hmm. You know, if this plant is not getting nearly as much water as this plant, or if these conditions aren't the same as conditions over in Botswana or New Zealand, you know, you can get all that and correct all that, and you can also consensusly design the parameters that you want to hit. So it is gamifying the world. Do you see what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Frank, could you speak to the security aspects of blockchain?
That's the best part, Corey. The best part is the security, because what we're trying to do here is imagine if you and I met and you introduced yourself as Corey and I was like, I don't believe you. You know, instead of Freeman on the land, or I'm a legal, you know, person, or I'm a living, you know, being on the land, I want to know how you got your name, or that you are who you say you are.
Papers, please.
Yeah, right. Papers, please. The only way you could really do that is say, well, you could ask God, or you could ask my creator, you know, and I can, you know, if I could do that, I could say, is he really Corey? Yeah, he's really Corey.
If it feels right, I'm Corey.
There you go.
Take my word for it.
But in blockchain, it's cryptographic security. It's very cryptographic. And that's a whole other subject, too, about how strong or how good the cryptography is. But it's very good. And it's better than the 1950s banking security that you're still living under, you know, through banks. So it's better than anything you can get in the bank, far better than anything the government can give you. And now you can record, like, your thumbprint and put it up in the blockchain. And let's say I have a smartphone. And I say, I want to prove who you are, so let me see your thumbprint. Well, I can program that device so that it doesn't do anything other than to verify the markers in your fingerprint to a file loaded on the blockchain somewhere that I can't ever get to again. So there's my access to finding out who you are and who you say you are. Because, again, nobody can change that record. And as long as you have, you know, chain of custody of your own identity, which, you know, you could put in biometrics or you could do it some other way, then nobody can get into your stuff. Only you can get into it. It doesn't matter where you are. So what a lot of people are doing with this, just to give you a real-world example, let's say you bought a room from me on Airbnb, and you say, well, how do I get in? And I say, it doesn't matter. Just as long as we utilize the same form of, you know, security protocol or identity protocol, and there's many of them out there now, just the house will be open for you at that time. So let's say you show up 5 minutes early, and you go and you scan your thumb, and the house doesn't let you in. Well, just watch the clock, and then at the right time, scan your thumb again, and it lets you in. And that can all be done over smart contracts. So this is what people are really worried about, because they think that the government's going to control this and run everything. Well, that's if you give them the control.
Yeah,
perfect example
in.
Of that would be like the Affordable Care Act. They want us to put all of our information into their database. Bullshit. I'll keep my information database-centric on my end, and I'll just let you look into my database whenever you need to. Here's the key, and here's the key that only has one specific, you know, door that it can open, so you can only just look at, say, like my blood type or something like that.
For
so it's
consideration.
About putting, the same way that we're just talking about making all the items in the supply chain smart and responsible for themselves, now we can make all the people smart and responsible for themselves, and then let the code handle the interaction without anybody's eyes looking inside of it to see if, you know, to change anything. So that's where the government's kind of, you know, screw us out of everything, because they want to centralize it and say, oh, I will hire the right people that we know that they pass a screening test and they won't share. That's the NSA. That's the CIA. That's all these intelligence guys that are gathering all the information, and they're cheating on their girlfriends, and they're, you know, they're spying on their friends. So why would you trust any centralized authority? Blockchain is the centralized authority, and it's not a human being. Now I can trust it. So it's a big trust engine, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, there's a lot of factionalized stuff going on, and you know, it is what it is. You can only claim damage on stuff that you've handled correctly, and there's nothing else you could have done, and now you got to go and get enforcement. You know, whatever's being done to you is only by your own consent at all times, all the time, for every reason. Blockchain, awesome. Security, privacy.
So imagine all that power coming back to individuals. Imagine that.
That's
that
right.
Coming back
right, and it's actually decentralization, if you think about it. Excellent.
So back to the farming side. That's where the next generation of investors are going into the idea of farming or mining, as they call it in the blockchain. Because what you are is you're actually offering your computer to help figure out these big cryptological problems or cryptographic problems. Are you familiar with the old SETI screensaver guys?
Can't say I am.
Anyone? Okay. Well, so no. SETI, you know, they didn't have the computational power to take all this information that was coming in and look at it and do, you know, all the calculations they need. So they said, hey, can we get some help? And people were like, sure, you know, how do we help? And they're like, well, if your computer's down for a few minutes and it goes into screensaver mode, then, you know, here's a program you can load on your computer. And when it's in that mode, when you're not using it, then we can get that excess CPU cycle, all those CPU cycles, and we'll use it to you know, figure out our problems. Well, that's where farming is coming in. You see what I mean? So a lot of people are building the infrastructure for blockchain because they're investing in all this computational power, all these machines. China's really big on this. And they're putting them in warehouses, and they're just these giant warehouses of machine capability, and they just turn all those machines into either one set of blockchains they want to hash or another, or break it all up or whatever. But the reason that's important is because that's the farming of the 21st century. The hardware side of this is being allowed out there to just anybody that wants to buy enough hardware to help kind of support the cause. You see what I mean? Instead of just letting Google buy all the computers, and then they say, well, we're going to show you how we're going to use all these computers to control all your information. Other people can break that up. It's kind of like the decentralization of the decentralization. Does that make sense?
Yes.
It does.
Great.
And I ran that quick because I know we're running short on time, guys. So,
yeah, we've got about two more minutes. I really think that we could bring you on for another show and talk about this just for, you know, just hours. I really believe that it's super important to remove the physical labor aspect, the survival aspect, the wasting my time aspect that everybody goes through on some level, in some way, in their life, every single fucking day. All that stuff removed. It might be a little scary at first because people are used to filling that creative void with distraction, right? Game of Thrones or Dancing with the Stars or American Idol or any of that shit. You understand? When that happens and we actually make that shift all the way over, there's going to be a few people that need some time and some space to kind of get used to the fact that, well, shit, if I don't have anything else that I'm stuck or that I have to do, what do I want to do? And so when people do kick at that, it's going to be like a new gear. They're going to kick it in, and it's just going to build and build and build, and more people will cog together. And these things that you're talking about with bartering and exchanging and, you know, regulating it through the blockchain, all of that stuff is just going to explode so fast. It's unstoppable. It's happening already.
Yeah. So imagine life without having to do everything just to pay a tax.
That's right.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is it's definitely the type of technology that's been freeing the world. But on this in this particular day and age, unlike the other times that technology came to free the world, you know, this is a war of art that we're in, and it's art gets corrupted and recontextualized and repeated and then crammed back down our throats. You know, you brought up Game of Thrones, Bread and Circus. You know, I've been watching TV for 30 years, and nothing's changed. You know, it's still the same situational comedy. You know, walk in, make a joke, there's a laugh track. There's nothing new in that world. So what it's really going to do is it's going to free people up to going back to creating their art. And art is in a variety of things, not just a pretty picture you paint on the wall, but it's going to be into computers, the Internet of Things, the sensors, the Adreno sensors that are going to be basically growing your plants. Imagine if you can just build a plant bed and just follow the instructions that thousands of people all over the planet are consensusly sending to you. So you have all the best information in real time as to how you need to be growing your food. So what are you going to do with all your free time? Well, you're probably going to go out and meet new friends and spend more time with your friends. That's really what it's going to come down to.
Find and build new skills.
Create new possibilities.
That's right. Well, Frank, you've been so awesome. Thank you so much for explaining that to everybody.
Oh, this was my pleasure, guys.
If anybody's going to talk about it, it's got to be you. I know you've got a handle on the whole blockchain thing. You can speak just like I speak about tactical wordsmithing. Do me a favor. When we get off the air, I'd like you to send me an email with your availability. We'll pull you on for another month, probably May or something like that. And then right now, just real quick, about 30 seconds, if you want to plug yourself, if you have a link, if you have like a media manager, somebody that handles your social stuff, tell everybody how we can connect with you. Go.
Well, I don't do this professionally. I came on this as a personal favor to you, Jordan, because I absolutely appreciate all the hard work that you've done. You've helped me out immensely, and it was a great way to meet Corey. So, you know, I don't really plug myself, but there is one place that I can be found that if anybody wants to or feels the need to or they have to, you can find me on LinkedIn. I'm just under Frank Bacon, and it's a pretty good caricature picture of me, And I don't really mingle a whole lot, so I don't like my phone to ring, you know, off the hook.
Right.
I'm a bit of a mob boss, you know what I mean? So I let other people in my network handle those things, and I can put people in touch with other people if they need to. But directly, LinkedIn is the best place to reach me.
Good enough. I appreciate it. Thank you so much. So we're definitely going to have you on again. Don't forget to email me. We'll get that taken care of. Frank, you've been awesome. And until next time. Stay alive and stay thriving. Okay. All right. Well, that was super cool, guys. I really appreciate you listening with us. Next week, I'm going to give you notice that we are moving into another realm or another domain. We will still bring the universal contracting principles with us, negotiation techniques. However, it's going to get a little exciting because next week is going to be about sex and relationships, emotional bonds and connections, things of that nature. Corey, I'm super excited because I've had a roller coaster hell of a ride with women in my life, and some
who hasn't
been bad. And hopefully we can take some callers as well. I'm open to that. If anybody wants to call in and share their story, share a question, ask for some suggestion or advice, if I have gone through it, I'll let you know. If I have some sort of answer for you or analysis, I'll give it to you. If we don't know, we'll tell you we don't know. Right.
It's a big subject. It's core to our very existence. So I'm looking forward to it.
We're gonna get a little bit into sex magic as well. I think that's gonna be something I want to touch on because that's something that's very misconstrued, thought of as very taboo or shame, stuff like that. So that's it. Thank you for listening. If there's any Plag listeners out there, if you found us on Plag, you guys are awesome. Thank you very much. Keep spreading the show. We're just rocking it. The YouTube series, I promise, guys, is coming. We're just working on our negotiation station and our marketing techniques right now. And we have a lot of big things going on. So that will be up shortly. Thank you very much for being patient on that. And we'll see you next week.